Okay, the next argued case this morning is number 2086, Military Veterans Advocacy against the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Mr. Flynn.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, James Anglin Flynn for the petitioner MVA. Veterans who served on these South Pacific Islands were systematically exposed to toxic herbicides. The military sprayed them around bases to clear runways and communication lines. To train in firefighting, crews crawled through the burning remnants of herbicide barrels. And on Johnston Island, the military stored and spilled enormous quantities of Agent Orange as it prepared for incineration. Now, when these veterans seek service connection for diseases arising from that exposure, they are denied. Because, for example...
There's no question, just getting to the heart of the matter.
Yes.
I mean, these folks are not covered by the Agent Orange Act because they didn't fight in Vietnam.
They are not covered by, under the current interpretation, they are not covered by the statutory presumption in the Agent Orange Act.
So what are you seeking here? That the independent of what Congress should or shouldn't do?
Yes.
I assume there are bills pending on this. There are bills pending on everything. But but independent of congressional action?
Yes.
What are you, you're saying what? That the Veterans Administration is required to undertake rulemaking for coverage?
Yes. So I want to emphasize the narrowness of the determination before the court today. It was just that the secretary erred in refusing to initiate rulemaking and to guess that rulemaking is warranted to determine.
And what is the standard of review that we have in terms of what is their authority in terms of making the decision on whether or not to undertake rulemaking?
Your Honor, it's the traditional APA review. It is a higher burden in this context than the petition for rulemaking, we acknowledge. But where there's, for instance, an error of law, as there was here with statutory interpretation, there is no deference to VA on that question. And then as to the factual questions, those are arbitrary and capricious review. So familiar APA standard.
Okay, so you're saying because the errors of law are sufficient to compel rulemaking. What are those errors?
That's right. There are two errors. One was an interpretation of the Agent Orange Act that imposes a distinction between tactical and commercial herbicides. That's found nowhere in that statute. It's found nowhere in the legislative history. It's not within the purpose of the statute. VA has no support for this. The second.
So let's take that off.
Sure.
I don't know. I guess I'm not clear. There's no support. We have a history. I mean, this Agent Orange Act dealt
yes.
with cases that occurred between 62 and 75.
Yes.
Thousands and thousands of veterans have received compensation and have had claims under the Agent Orange Act. Is there any evidence whatsoever that the Vietnam, the persons who received benefits under this statute were exposed to anything other than toxic herbicide?
So
isn't that what the statute was about? I mean,
the statute was talking about
plenty of legislative history. Some of us even are old enough to have lived through it. And it was all about, it wasn't about commercial herbicides. It was about this thing going on in Vietnam. In fact, the statute isn't really completely silent because the statute connects the herbicide spraying to a window of exposure, and that exposure ended in 75 when the government figured out that it was going to stop doing this spraying of what we now call tactical herbicide to distinguish it from commercial herbicide.
Yes.
So where is the strong statutory bent that gives you the ability to overcome the otherwise very liberal standard of review.
Yes, Your Honor. So I agree that there's a history of enormous exposure to the so-called tactical herbicides. There's no indication in the legislative history here that the statute was intended to be cabined to those herbicides. To the contrary, the statute identifies the herbicides by chemical composition, and the commercial herbicides contained those same molecules. So we're talking about Congress identifying substances based on chemical composition, not purpose. I agree that there's a nexus in the statute that has to do with support of military operations in Vietnam. That language also clearly includes places like Guam and Johnston Island, where commercial herbicides, and we submit tactical herbicides, were sprayed in support of military operations in Vietnam.
Well, that's, so, I don't understand, actually, where is that language of the support? Because I was really not clear on what your argument about the support language was getting to.
Sure.
Because clearly this statute covers beginning to end the Republic of Vietnam and not folks in other countries. So whether they were supportive of it, I'm sure there were thousands of military bases all across the world that were supportive of the so I'm not understanding what that support language gives you.
Sure. So there are two statutory subsections at issue here. I think Your Honor is referring to 1116F, which certainly is restricted to veterans who served in the Republic of Vietnam.
Okay.
The statutory subsection that the Secretary was interpreting was 1116A3, which is not limited to service in Republic of Vietnam. It's just limited to military operations in the Republic of Vietnam. So there were, for example, service members who served in Guam, did not set foot in the Republic of Vietnam, but may have even flown planes over Vietnam and were exposed on Guam.
Where is the line? I'm looking at 3. 3 what?
Yes. In support of the United States and allied military operations. That's 38 U.S.C. 1116A3.
Yeah, what is it? I'm not sure where that gets you. It means an herbicide agent.
Yes.
Means a chemical and an herbicide used in support of the U.S. and allied military in the Vietnam. That's about, again, used in military operations in the Republic of Vietnam. This doesn't have to do with coverage of individuals who are exposed. There's no debate that the Agent Orange Act only applied to people who served in Vietnam. So saying the support language expands the coverage of the Agent Orange Act?
No, Your Honor. Over time, since the enactment of the Agent Orange Act, VA has promulgated regulatory presumptions that expand the coverage of the Agent Orange Act beyond the Republic of Vietnam. So, for example,
but not to everybody.
No.
Not based on this language that they supported.
Yes,
this was the statutory
subsection they cited.
But the DMZ, it was after, as Judge Newman referred to in another case, they've expanded it to the DMZ zone. I think Congress did that, right?
Congress did that, not the C-123s. That was regulatory solely.
Okay, the C-123s. And those are just people who were flying these planes and dropping the Agent Orange in Vietnam. Right?
Or even serving in the United States cleaning these planes.
I'm sorry?
I believe it also covers veterans who served in the United States maintaining those planes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you're saying, therefore, that they're required to extend the benefits of the statute, which covers folks who served in Vietnam, to every place that provided some support? I'm not seeing what you're doing with this language.
Yes.
In support of.
So it was the Secretary who said that this language prevents him from issuing the presumption, right? So the Secretary is interpreting this language, and he says, no, MVA, you can't get a presumption because the Agent Orange Act's definition of herbicide agent doesn't cover commercial herbicides.
Did he say anything about the in support of language?
Yes, at least so. And that's the basis on which they
defend. Where is that? I've got the letter in front. Are you talking about the February 2021 letter?
Yes. So that's it, page 3. And that's the first full paragraph. The end of that is citing Section A3, the in support of language.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so they say that that applies, for instance, to the C-123 because that was so-called tactical herbicides, but not to Guam, for instance, because in their view, that was just commercial herbicides.
All they cite is the statutory language.
That's right.
What I'm seeing.
So that was the basis on which they promulgated a presumption for C-123. We think there's no distinction to be made between the C-123, for instance, and the Guam exposure, except for this tactical commercial distinction, which we believe is not supported by the statute.
So your argument is that they have to do rulemaking because there's no difference between this and the C-123?
Our argument is they have to do rulemaking because they gave a reason for not doing so,
uh-huh.
And that was this in support of this clause doesn't cover commercial herbicides, and we think that reason was wrong.
Well, that has to do with the commercial herbicide stuff.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So then I understand your mm-hmm. argument about commercial herbicides. I may not agree with it, but I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So your view is that any other location in the world. Your argument would be expanded beyond Guam and Johnson Islands and Samoa if you're talking about the use of commercial herbicides.
Mm-hmm.
which are still being used everywhere, right? Doesn't that, I mean, I guess, I don't know what you're looking for in legislative history. It's quite clear, in my view, there's years of documentation as to the Agent Orange Act being passed because of this extra potent tactical herbicide that was sprayed in Vietnam, not for purposes of doing weeding, but for purposes of controlling the vegetation in a very specific way. So you're saying the statute doesn't compel that, so that shouldn't be a constraining force, and any use of commercial herbicides should count in terms of allowing the presumption?
Your Honor, could you repeat that again? I understand the question there.
Is your position that commercial herbicides are sufficient
for the presumption?
Exposure to commercial herbicides by any military, in any military location in the world, that may be okay if it's, they were all involved, or plenty of them were involved in supporting the efforts in Vietnam.
That's right.
That they are all, they all should get the presumption that Congress has made available only to the DMZ zone and to Vietnam veterans who served in Vietnam.
We think at the very least that rulemaking is warranted to make that determination, and that the Secretary's interpretation of the statute in denying rulemaking was an error. I also want to note that I respectfully disagree with your characterization of the historical record. The record's replete with evidence that so-called commercial herbicides were also, or herbicides generally, of a toxic nature, were sprayed by hand, by boat, by backpack. So it was not just the aerial, especially toxic, especially large spraying.
So why did they stop it? The statute covers a specific period, 61 to 75. And I thought there's plenty of historical documentation, because once they figured out what was going on and that this was not really a good idea to expose people to it, they got rid of it. That all had to do with, that wasn't commercial herbicides. Those were tactical herbicides, right?
So a couple of points. They're identical chemically, right? So other than the Agent Orange Act, the blue, the white, the pink, those agents were identical to the commercial herbicides. It's just, is it packaged in a barrel that says, has a blue ribbon on it? So this is an illusory distinction in terms of the materials that are involved.
So the same stuff that I use in my yard is what they were spraying in Vietnam that's covered by the Agent Orange Act?
I'm not sure what you're spraying today in your yard, but at least at the time, yes. So 2,4-D, for instance, was in commercial herbicides. And I have at 2580.
Isn't the record replete that what they were spraying in Vietnam was substantially different than the normal thing that at the time I could have gone into the, local, store and purchased?
No, Your Honor. That is contradicted by VA's own statements and by the report at 2582, which says that of all the herbicides used in South Vietnam, only Agent Orange was formulated differently from the materials used for commercial application. So Agent Blue, Agent Pink, Agent White, those were identical substances to those sold in the United States commercially.
So what do you contend is the difference between commercial and tactical?
We contend there is no difference, that these identical chemical substances were sometimes used for tactical purposes, sometimes used for what the Secretary calls commercial purposes, but that this was an illusory distinction because the same chemicals were being used for both purposes. The Agent Orange was used on flight lines and communication lines, for example. So this is an illusory distinction that the Secretary is trying to retroactively impose, despite the fact that he recognized, so VA's own report at 1593 acknowledges this small-scale spraying, and that's true also of the legislative history citations in VA's brief.
To be clear, you're not drawing or pressing the line that I got the impression was of concern, for example, for Guam, which seemed to be the only location where there was at least attempt to, in the record, at least to represent that there had been tactical use of Agent Orange, or Johnston Island, where it was seen undisputed that there was leakage from the storage tanks, but no other usage in Johnston Island. But you're not saying that those areas should at least achieve some sort of presumption.
We are saying those.
So you're saying it's all or nothing, which is what I think I just heard in the back and forth.
No, Your Honor. So we offer there two errors here. The first one is the one we've been talking about, the statutory error. We say the statute should cover these substances because it identifies these substances by chemical composition. We say that the tactical commercial distinction should not apply here because they're identified by chemical composition. The second error we assert is that even accepting that interpretation, that the statute is cabined to tactical herbicides, that tactical herbicides were used for small-scale spraying for commercial purposes on Guam. So
that point, if I could follow up,
yep.
Assuming you can establish that, at least make the argument, and I think maybe this is what Judge, that there was something. I mean, mm-hmm. they were stored it,
yep.
even if they were stored by private contractors. I think, why isn't the answer to that sufficient? I mean, in Vietnam, mm-hmm. there were serious studies, and Vietnam is not that huge a country, mm-hmm. and there was so much use of Agent Orange that Congress passed an unprecedented statute saying that anyone who stepped foot, any veteran, any military officer who stepped foot in Vietnam had enough exposure. None of that has been said in Guam. I mean, people who were in Guam, who served in Guam and contracted some sort of disease that is connected to the use of Agent Orange or whatever, they can file a claim, and if they can make their case, as Judge Newman's suggestion, that there is evidence that they were exposed individually, then they will win. What the difference is in this case, you're saying what? That every veteran, would your proposed rule apply as the Agent Orange Act does, that any military officer who stepped foot in Guam should be entitled to this presumption? Even though you have some evidence, perhaps, but very limited evidence in terms of potential exposure? That's the difference here. Nobody's saying they shouldn't be allowed to establish their case
yes.
and get paid. The question is whether every military person who stepped foot in Guam should be able to get the presumption because of what you're saying we know happened there.
I disagree, Your Honor. VA is saying that these veterans should not be able to recover if they were exposed only to commercial herbicides, that they are not warranted with the presumption if they were only exposed to commercial herbicides. So they're looking for tactical herbicides. I would say with respect to why a presumption is warranted, and again, all we are arguing is
No, but I thought the evidence that you put on that we were discussing with Judge Newman were about tactical herbicides.
There's no dispute commercial herbicides were also sprayed on these islands.
Well, but don't you think they were sprayed everywhere in the world?
They were toxic and they were sprayed in many places, Your Honor. I hear a concern about the spray
slope. So we're talking about a new regime. We're pretty far away from Agent Orange, which I think everybody in the world has some idea what that means. Mm-hmm. We're talking about any government use of commercial herbicides on any government facility. I don't know what the time frame is between not starting in 1950 and going to now, is entitled to a presumption, the same presumption that the Agent Orange veterans are entitled to?
Well, Your Honor, it would be limited by, for example, the nexus to the conflict in Vietnam that the statute requires.
Wouldn't you say that, I mean, our bases in Germany, India, I mean, there are plenty of places, right? Vietnam War lasted a long time, including bases in the United States, right?
You're right, Your Honor. We agree. We think that slippery slope is not so slippery or dangerous as VA paints it to be. And that result we think is required by O'Farrell, which concluded that support provided in California by an attorney was support of contingent military operations across the world. I believe it was that.
Well, again, I emphasize, individual proof in an individual case is one thing. What yes. we are talking here is the presumption. Doesn't it strike you as odd? I mean, Congress worked for a long time and really cared about the Agent Orange Act. They got involved in the DMZ. Mm-hmm. They've been involved in Thailand. I mean, they've played a very, very active role. If you scroll down and look at the bills that have been, has anyone in Congress ever proposed that anyone who served in a military base that supported Vietnam during 1960 to 1975 should be given a presumption of exposure to Agent Orange?
Your Honor, I'm not aware of a bill that would cover anyone on any military base. There is a bill that would cover some of these islands, for example, Guam and Johnston Island. I guess two points. One is that in support of can be limited. Courts limit things like that all the time. O'Farrell did that. It was not concerned with a slippery slope in that regard. a court might conclude that In Support Of needed to be in the South Pacific Theater, for instance. It might conclude that commercial herbicides sprayed on a runway in Germany were not in support of operations in Vietnam, but that commercial herbicides sprayed on a runway in Guam were, because those planes were flying over Vietnam and dropping bombs there. Those were military operations in Vietnam. So that, for instance, might be
one. You're asking us to decide that.
No, we're asking you to decide that rulemaking is warranted to make these decisions. Unless there are questions.
All right, let's hear from the VA. Thank you. Okay, Mr. O.
May it please court. Rather than going through all the evidence, I'd like to pose a way about holistically thinking about the issues. I think, Judge Prost, you were centering your questions on this issue. There are instances where a presumption is required by law, where Congress says, VA, you have to do it. That's the Agent Orange Act. There are instances where the VA, using its Section 501 authority for rulemaking, can say, persuade us that a presumption in this case is necessary. We are not in a statutory universe. Congress did not say, VA, you must issue a presumption that covers every veteran that served in the Vietnam era. Judge Prost, you had a slippery slope question, which was, doesn't this essentially cover every base during the Vietnam era? Is that your position? You asked the petitioner that question. On page 17 and 18 of the reply brief, the answer is yes. And their answer
is... let's finish what you were saying about how, okay, Congress didn't legislate, so it's up to you to do rulemaking and evaluate this.
Right.
So why is there not at least enough to compel you to do rulemaking?
So that's where I think the battle here lies.
Yeah.
What does the evidence show? So we're in that second universe, the evidentiary question. And again, these are highly deferential levels of review, overturned only in the rarest and most compelling circumstances. So let's look at the evidence. Well, there are two factors that drive the inquiry in this universe. The first factor is, for something like herbicide exposure, does the aggregate evidence strongly show wide and pervasive toxic herbicide exposure warranting a broad-based presumption? That makes sense because a presumption is broad-based and it's indiscriminate. So in that universe, you need evidence that the presumption is warranted in order to use a blunt force over-inclusive tool like a presumption, where you're saying, okay, we're out of the universe of individually proving your claims. We're just going to presume you all got it. We need broad-based evidence. So that's factor one. Factor two is, would the claim otherwise be hard to prove on an individual basis? If the claim were easy to prove on an individual basis, you wouldn't need a presumption because everyone could just prove it. So those are the two factors that drove the Secretary's inquiry. And conceptually, if you look at the Secretary's decision, APPX 1 through 9, that's precisely what the Secretary did. He said, well, look, I'm looking at the evidence, and here's what I see. With this lens of broad and pervasive toxic herbicide exposure, he says, well, look, we did a DOD review. It was pretty exhaustive. It went through, it had this joint search criteria between the VA and the DOD. We looked at all these documents, all the official records, government reports, unit histories, shipping logs, contracts, scientific reports, photographs. No evidence of broad and pervasive herbicide use in Guam. Or I should say, the herbicides that VA is worried about. There was commercial herbicide use, but they said the ones that we're worried about, we don't see it. There's no evidence of that.
So they contended that it was basically an illusory distinction between tactical and commercial. Can you speak to that?
I think what they're saying is, and it kind of tailors on their Agent Orange Act argument, they're saying as long as you find the chemical compositions that were in Agent Orange anywhere, you should automatically assume that that's what you're required, how you're required to define herbicide. You can't make any distinction between the harmful thing that everyone cares about, which is like stuff like Agent Orange, which was unregistered, undiluted, just poured over Vietnam, or the stuff that you would buy at Lowe's and Home Depot. They're saying because of that, you can't make any distinction. So the mere fact that the VA said, yeah, we're not worried about the stuff at Home Depot. We're worried about the stuff that Congress was worried about when they passed Agent Orange. That's the shorthand the VA is using when they're saying tactical versus commercial.
But the other side says there's nothing in the statute that differentiates between, that makes the, draws those distinctions. Therefore, we ought to be guided by the broad statutory language of the Agent Orange Act.
And I'd like to direct the court to the Agent Orange Act, specifically subpart A3. And this is actually, they omit the leading language in their brief repeatedly. They cite the rest of it, but they omit the part that says, for purposes of this section. Well, historically, what does that language do? It limits application of that definition to purposes of this section, which is the Agent Orange Act. So as soon as you add that language back in, this whole thing about, well, used in support of, you know, in the Republic of Vietnam, what does that modify? It becomes useless because that definition of herbicide agent only applies to the Agent Orange Act, which only applies to military operations in the Republic of Vietnam. So the statutory question has no bearing on the question before this court. It's really an evidentiary question. What we do have is the DoD search criteria, no evidence. The GAO report investigated all the shipping logs, interviewed all the witnesses who had said they saw Agent Orange, and they said, we can't substantiate any of that. Okay, so we have that weight of evidence. The Secretary looked at it, analyzed it, and said, it's pretty convincing. What do we have as a counterweight? Well, we have some affidavits. Some people saying, well, I think I saw it. I think only one affidavit actually says, I sprayed it. It's by Leroy Foster. I think it's APPX, page 18. And he says, I sprayed it. But, you know, the GAO actually interviewed Affiance itself and said, you know, you say you saw it. And they couldn't substantiate it. Nothing backed it up other than someone saying, I think I did it. And so the VA said, well, look, that's anecdotal evidence. These people are still able to prove their claim on an individual basis. It doesn't prove this wide and pervasive exposure that we're looking for.
Well, how does this, your friend cited specifically the C-123 rulemaking. So how, in your view, is this, is the case that they're seeking, the rulemaking they're seeking, not as compelling as the C-123?
So the C-123, if the court's aware, like the way we describe the factual scenario in our brief, C-123s are what flew over Vietnam to spray the herbicides. And so what Congress said, or not Congress, I'm sorry, when the VA promulgated a rulemaking on that issue, and again, this was not necessarily an Agent Orange Act required promulgation of this presumption, they said, hey, you know, if we're going to cover this territory of Vietnam, it makes sense to cover the planes that are pouring the stuff over Vietnam, because it's very conceivable that they would have remnants of the toxic herbicides that we are worried about on them and the people that would work on those planes. So that's the connection there. So when we're looking at, again, the factors where the VA is not necessarily compelled by statute to issue the presumption, the circumstances themselves, the evidence shows, okay, these planes were pouring tons of Agent Orange over Vietnam. We're worried about those service members because the levels of exposure, which we've measured, show that the planes carried this amount around the shells of the planes or wherever else in the plane. And so we want to cover the people working on those planes too. That was a very limited grant of presumption. The same goes for Korea. Under Section 501, the VA's 501 authority said, let's cover this very small strip of land on the DMZ zone in Korea because we know we actually sprayed Agent Orange there over this period of 2 years. And so they covered that too.
But I thought Congress did that too, or was that?
They promulgated it later under the, I think it's under a subpart of the Blue Water Navy Act. So it was codified later, but first it was a regulation. So that, again, we're talking about a different universe. In this universe, you have to convince the Secretary that a broad-based presumption is warranted. The other evidence they have was photographs of brown vegetation. Well, that could be caused by commercial herbicides. Photographs of unlabeled drums. Who knows what they contain? The best evidence they have maybe is some trace sampling reports, but what the Secretary said there is, hey, look, like we can find trace levels of 24D and 245T, but that stuff's available in commercial herbicides, and we know commercial herbicides were used. So that in itself doesn't establish the kind of necessary evidence for a presumption that we're looking for. It might prove the evidence of a commercial herbicide, the stuff we're not worried about, but it doesn't prove the pervasive broad levels of toxic herbicide exposure, the one that we are worried about. That's in a nutshell the Secretary's decision, and we think that decision is supported by substantial evidence. This is not one of those situations where we're facing a circumstance where the Secretary doesn't explain his decision, doesn't address all the evidence. He's merely weighing the evidence and reached a particular outcome. With all respect, this doesn't reach the rarest and most compelling circumstances where the court does not affirm the Secretary's denial of petition for rulemaking. We respectfully request the court affirm this.
Let me ask you just one further question. Here in this case that you cite, I guess, in the Secretary's 9-page response, you cite, and you mentioned the DoD study and the GAO study. Were those undertaken for purposes of evaluating where else, what else might be covered or undertaken during rulemaking?
I am not 100% sure. I'm sorry. I'm not prepared to answer that.
I have a couple questions. What about the standing issue? Do you believe that those declarations that were provided in the reply are sufficient to show?
No, and Judge Cunningham, I appreciate you bringing us back to that, because that is a question I wanted to address. So for the associational standing issue, we mentioned in our response that they had included affidavits from only individuals from Guam. They didn't include individuals from Johnson Island, American Samoa. We've evaluated the affidavits that they've provided in their reply. On the face of it, it appears they have, and we'll say barely met the standard for associational standing, but we defer to the court to evaluate it for itself. The one thing I will mention, though, is procedurally raising these affidavits in a reply is procedurally improper.
And courts, well, leaving that aside, but yeah, you're saying the government is not opposing standing on the basis if we consider these.
We are not opposing the associational standing, but I do think procedurally how it was brought up, it can wreak all sorts of havoc on the briefing process.
Yeah, I know, but you know, we've all lived through the past few years, and this was an issue that was brought up sua sponte by the court started it sua sponte,
right.
And that really quite of recent vintage.
I mean, the one factual distinction I'll bring up is they did it for Guam, and they didn't do it for these two other islands. So I think I'll leave it at that.
Before you leave, I know you're trying to get out of here, but give me one more second. What about the surplusage argument? Talking about reading out the support of, or at least that's the argument that I saw was being made. I want you to address that.
Yeah, I don't think there's any surplusage argument there. When I read the face of it, subpart 3, A3, when it defines herbicide agent, it says for purposes of this section, the term herbicide agent means a chemical in an herbicide used in support of the United States and allied military operations in the Republic of Vietnam. I just don't see, maybe I'm not creative enough, I don't see another way to read that. When you say for purposes of this section, that means only for purposes of the Agent Orange Act. When you're talking about used in support of military operations in the Republic of Vietnam, you're talking about in the Republic of Vietnam. I don't think these are textual points that you can just ignore and say, the Agent Orange Act just has broad application to any geographic area, as page 17 and 18 of the petitioner's reply brief seems to argue.
Okay. Any more questions for us? Anything else? Okay. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Flynn, you have the last word.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll start with the factors the Secretary outlined. One, whether there was evidence of widespread exposure, and two, how easy it is to prove that exposure. First, there is evidence of widespread exposure. For example, we discuss in our brief how the chemicals sprayed in Guam were drawn into the aquifer using dry injection wells, and then the water was drawn out for drinking water in Guam. The same is true with the swimming pool, the laundry facilities, the cooking facilities. That was all coming out of that aquifer. And as we show in the briefs, there was testing indicating that there were high concentrations of herbicides at the intake site for that desalination system, which is quite similar, Judge Niemann, as you were observing earlier, to the evidence that was present in Procopio, where there was herbicide exposure at the intake for the water in the ships. I also want to use Agent Blue as an example here. So the Secretary says that there are herbicides he's concerned about, worried about, and herbicides he's not worried about. Well, Agent Blue is, I'm going to mispronounce this, but cacodylic acid. The Secretary agrees that that's covered in the Agent Orange Act. That's part of the statutory coverage. But for some reason, the Secretary is concerned about cacodylic acid when it's in a barrel with a blue label on it called Agent Blue, but not worried about it when it's in a commercial form, even though they're the exact same toxicity, the same chemical components. So we submit the Secretary has not offered a rational distinction between those two. And also with exposure to Agent Blue, so we have at Appendix 18, a veteran eyewitness explaining that he personally sprayed Agent Blue on Guam. And there is no evidence on the other side contradicting that. They point to the GAO report, but that report was exclusively about Agent Orange. Congress commissioned these reports and specifically instructed them only to consider Orange. So there's no evidence on the other side about Blue. There's only this eyewitness testimony. So we submit the Secretary had no factual basis in the record to conclude that there was no exposure to tactical herbicides, because the only evidence in the record is that there was. On the statutory point, we'd again point to the coverage of the chemical components. For purposes of this section, we think is a red herring. There's no question the Secretary was using this section in this denial letter. He was applying it here, and he was using his interpretation of the Agent Orange Act as a shield to deny the rulemaking. And we propose that when he erred in that interpretation, he shouldn't be able to use it as a shield and instead should have proceeded to rulemaking. We think if there's any doubt here, the pro-veteran canon should apply and the statute should be construed broadly to cover both tactical and commercial herbicides. Unless the court has any other questions. Thank you very much. We'd ask you to grant the petition.
Thank you. Thank you both. The case is taken under submission, and that concludes this panel's arguments for today.